Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Randall White. When schools shut down back in March due to the coronavirus 19 crisis, COVID-19 crisis, it was a shock to most students, parents, and caregivers. You know, no more dressing up and getting ready. Daily routines just upended. No more sports. And connections with teachers went online. Some schools managed this whole process better than others. Then fast forward into the spring and summer when many parents were sent surveys about their comfort levels with possibly sending their kids back to school in the fall. Well, that's not happening, as the state has come out and said the return for the vast majority of schools in California will need to start online. So here we are, a few days, maybe weeks before school starts for most. Districts have had a few months now to prepare, whether public or private. Most students will be firing up their Chromebooks, iPads, and other devices to start the school year at home. You know the expression, necessity is the mother of invention. So the unusual situation has brought about some creative ideas for how to teach during a pandemic. You may have heard of the trend called learning pods or school pods. We're going to take a deep dive into all of this today on Insight, and we invite you to join the conversation by using the hashtag AskInsight on Twitter. You can always direct tweet as well. I'm at Randall White, and that's an O-L instead of an A-L-L, unusual spelling, Randall White, or at CAP Radio Insight. And we begin this hour with Superintendent Chris Evans. He is in charge of the Natomas Unified School District and has been on Insight before, so we welcome you back, Mr. Evans.
Good to be back. Thanks for having me.
So let's start there at Natomas Unified. What has the last couple of months or even the last couple of days been like in terms of planning?
Long hours, long days, not a lot of sleep. We're almost there, right? Right now we're just trying to get creative in how we help kids.
How different will the online experience be when the new school year starts than it was when you got kind of launched into it during the first part of the pandemic?
Yeah, about 180 degrees different.
Really?
Absolutely. We owed our students and families nothing less. I mean, we were launched into an emergency situation. We were blessed in our district. Our teachers all had the technology. They have a Mac AirBook and an iPad if they want. And they've been working on Google Drives, and we've had Wi-Fi in our district for almost a decade now. So that was super helpful from the adult perspective. From the kid perspective, we had thousands who didn't have regular access to the internet, and or they did have access to the internet, but it was low speed. And if they had two or three kids at home, it wasn't going to work.
Right.
So we focused more on getting the infrastructure built and getting connected to kids in a way that just really wasn't. I mean, at the time, it was very good. But looking back, in hindsight, an hour a day of kids working independently with their teachers teaching, with their parents teaching, wasn't enough. So very, very, very more structured now at each school site. Our high schools are almost 300 minutes in the presence virtually of teachers. Our elementary students have less, and we have breaks built in, but there is a rigorous schedule. Their school day starts when it did before the pandemic. Uh-huh. And goes not quite as long, but definitely goes a lot longer than an hour or so check in a day, and then a lot of independent work.
But there are like those virtual bells, I guess, You need to be here at this point.
We have a virtual bell schedule. I don't think a bell's going to ring on Zoom. I don't think we're that skilled yet. But yeah, you can actually go to Natomas Unified's webpage. We have something called a digital backpack that we put together for each school. And so parents can look at the digital backpack, and within that is really one-stop shopping for what they need. And for like secondary students who have a very rigid bell schedule, the bell schedule's there, and they'll start. And in high schools, they'll go to half their classes for a full hour a day, pretty much. And then their other half classes for 30 minutes for quick check-in with their teacher and see what's due the next day. And then it rotates. So kids are going to be getting the learning and teaching that they so richly deserve.
How many students are we looking at there in Natomas?
We have a unique situation where directly under our board of trustees, there's about 12,000. Then we have charter schools that we partner with that are a part of our family.
Right.
So grand total, we're supposed to cross 16,000 this year.
And the charter schools will also start at the same time and be virtual as well?
No, they will be virtual. Yes. We've been making sure to stay in contact with them. They did not delay the start to the school year. A lot of that was tied to we had to negotiate a contract, and I didn't want to go into the school year without the details for what the school day would look like and have parents frustrated. Where charter schools, they don't necessarily have to do that. So we'll start a couple weeks later and but probably end around the same time because they have modified schedules that usually take them into June as well.
Right. Are you confident that 100% of the students in the district will have viable internet and the ability to learn at the same level as their peers?
I mean, 100% is, I won't say 100% of anything in life. That's certainty. Last year, I think there were six kids we could not find throughout the district and either determined that because of the crisis, they had chosen to move away or had to move away to live with family and to relocate. And I think it was just like seven we couldn't find, six or seven. I mean, that's a pretty high degree of certainty. That was 99.7%. And we still have Chromebooks purchased for everyone. We did a board update last night. We started asking parents for whoever needs Chromebooks this year for whatever reason. Did the one we give you break? Did your personal one break? Do you need a Wi-Fi hotspot? And we already have like, I think, 1,600 or 1,700 requests for Chromebooks and 700 requests for Wi-Fi hotspots. And
the funds are there to do all that?
Well, I mean, now there is. Last year, we just kind of gambled and we bought it early.
Yeah.
We've had a pretty good tech plan. Our board of trustees in Natomas has been pretty smart with their money. And they asked staff to put together a tech plan. So we've had a ongoing tech plan with tech refresh every year that was pretty good. It was almost like a 2-to-1. And then we invested extra money out of our reserves in a 1-to-1. And thanks to the legislature and the governor, they've given us one-time money from the state's CARES Act that allows us to reimburse all those purchases. So yeah, the money is there for this year, at least through December.
Superintendent Evans, I got to say, you really impressed me that about shying away from the 100% or, you know, definitive statements in the newsroom like that. That's just a go-to for me if I'm writing a script and I see right. that there's an all, none, always, never, 100%, you know, that's rare in life. So you got to double check that for sure. So have you been in contact with Sac City or Elk Grove or any of the other districts regarding what's working for them or maybe what's not, what to avoid?
Well, I mean, I think Elk Grove just opened this week. And yeah, I was actually on a phone call heard from how they thought their first day went. Mm-hmm. I haven't called to bother the superintendent. It's his first week of school.
Right.
Let's let him get his feet grounded and in place. But we do. We have a lot of folks I've seen his MOU and he's seen mine. And actually, both of them are pretty structured schedules.
Mm-hmm.
So
MOU is what?
A memorandum of understanding. That is what the governor required and a number of agencies signed on to in the spring. As you were moving to distance learning or hybrid learning or whatever, he requested actually in a letter, quasi-directed, groups to do their best to collaborate with their local associations to try to develop a model together. And we're lucky, and so is Elk Grove and others like San Juan, that they have an MOU now. I think Twin Rivers has one. And that just gives parents, teachers, and a school district like, hey, this is our plan now. We can communicate it, and parents can begin to see what the start of the year is going to look like.
We're addressing pods coming up just a little bit later here on Insight. And I understand that Natomas Unified is addressing this issue head on.
Yeah, we are. We are. Across the state, school districts have had childcare in their districts, especially the larger ones, for years, and they've been running. Natomas Unified has been a growing district. I mean, a decade ago, we were at 11,000. 15 years ago, we were at 7,000 students. We didn't have massive childcare programs and missed the window on those funding opportunities in the state. But we're looking at all these stories you see from across the state and nation for folks who can afford nannies or learning pods. I have two direct family members that are trying to figure out how to find the right people, how to fund them. I'm getting lots of texts and calls from personal friends who go, hey, do you know a retired teacher who lives in Roseville? Do you know a retired teacher who lives here? Be willing to do it. And people are trying to pull that together. And our thought process, our board's process, to be honest, and they've been pretty vigilant about either they wanted a 5-day option for kids if it was healthy to do so, and we determined that it wasn't at this time, and or some kind of option for working parents, essential workers, and students of need. And so when the state gave us this additional funding, and right about the first week of July, say July 7th, we realized, hey, we have this pot of money and what it's for, right? Because the state signed its budget June 30th. We could start cranking the wheels around this idea. And so last night was the culmination of that with the board approving 5-0. I wanted to call them equity pods to begin with, because that's what the boards really wanted, like equity learning pods. But to make sure that we are following in alignment with California law, they're called day camps and childcare.
I see.
And they're really small groups, no larger than 10 to 1, some cases they may be 8 to 1, where students are going to come on campus and be cohorted together. And these nonprofits and childcare agencies have agreed to not only help working parents in the morning like they have traditionally done, mm-hmm. but to help kids through distance learning through the day. So they'll be, all we're doing is lending them our campus, giving them safety materials, because if they're gonna be on our campus, we have the best double warehouses full of safety masks and digital thermometers and digital thermometer stands and hand sanitizer right. and deep cleaning machines. And we've promised to track the classrooms they're in and clean them each night. And that's our contribution initially. And then, frankly, to work with one of the nonprofits, they have costs. So our board set aside up to $1 million for just 3 months to be able to help. So half of it, if you will be parent paid, and it has traditionally been done in Atomas for a very long time. Uh-huh. The other half is that equity work that our board wants, where they've put aside $1 million of this one-time money
for those that can't afford it. Yeah.
Yep, you got it.
Superintendent, I want to finish with you by saying the goal, right, is to get all the kids back in the classroom at some point when those coronavirus rates are down low enough for a long enough period of time that we can make that shift. How quickly can your district switch from the online situation to the traditional in-classroom that, you know, we've known for years?
Yeah, well, first of all, if you've read in the Bee and elsewhere, and I have other information, right, that the data is inaccurate now, reporting through the state. That's the biggest barrier.
It's lower than what we're seeing is lower than what's actually out there.
They're worried about that. Yeah. I can't speak for that with confidence, but that's something they're worried about. So they do not want schools to return until they get that data fixed. So that's a major barrier. We've had testing problems, we've had contact tracing problems, and now we have data problems. Once that's done, meanwhile, we're going to be continuing to work to negotiate with our teachers association, because we have to negotiate what the return looks like. So we ended negotiations with our memorandum of understanding, and now we get to start up again here real soon and negotiate what the transition mm-hmm. looks like. So we need the data, we need the contact tracing, we need the COVID testing, and we need another MOU. And then once all those things are in place, when California and the county gives us a green light, we'll probably open in a day or two.
All right, Superintendent Chris Evans, good luck this year, and thank you for joining us today. School starts in the Natomas Unified School District, by the way, exactly 3 weeks from today on August 27th. And if you're thinking about joining a learning pod, what do you need to know? Well, up next, we talk to a doctor who has her own kids in pods. She'll address safety, training, and how it's been working for her. And pod or not, a school psychologist from Sac City Unified joins us to help parents and students prep for distance learning and why you might want to get started now. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Randall White, and we're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Randall White, and our focus today is education, including parenting during the pandemic. Coming up in just a bit, we'll hear from a school psychologist about what to watch for in your child. But first, picture this. You're scrolling through your Nextdoor app or Facebook feed, and you see a message or post that someone in your neighborhood is starting a learning pod. A few weeks back, Governor Gavin Newsom was asked what he thought of pods, and here's what he had to say.
As it relates to these Facebook sites, these are self-organizing communities. It's exactly what we need to see more of. More parental involvement, more sharing of best practices, not just pain and struggles and suffering, more empathy, more engagement. And I'm very encouraged by the example you offered in terms of people, families coming together and sharing ideas and insights. That is exactly what one would expect in this environment and one would certainly hope for as well.
So are you interested? How do they work? Are they safe? Yesterday, I spoke with Dr. Bita Nasseri, a physician for over 20 years in Los Angeles, trained at the Mayo Clinic, UCLA, and USC. She has three children of her own.
To be exact, it's creating smaller and smaller social environments for the school-age children to be in an environment that's protected, that's controlled, but mimics the environment they were used to before pandemic. So it's creating a cohort of kids who stay together, have the same schedule. So tracking their social environment is very easy. It's easy to know where they've been, what they've done, who they've interacted with. And that way, if there is, God forbid, any kind of signs of illness for any of one of those individuals, the pod is in isolation and will come back out of isolation together once they are asymptomatic and tested negative for this COVID pandemic.
And are these just neighbors or a group of parents getting together and, you know, somehow discussing this over social media? How are they formed?
Varies from state to state, environment to environment. There are schools, private school systems that are creating those pod cohort systems cohesively together. As far as the administrative crowd is concerned, but they're also families. We've learned that, you know, social interaction is key for the vulnerable ages in school children from the ages of kindergarten all the way up to fifth grade. Once they're past fifth grade, it's not that crucial or critical for them to have that social education. So we're learning as parents, as individuals, as communities, that perhaps creating safe social environments for our children to learn those very important milestones of social interaction in a safe environment is key. So it depends. Mm-hmm. Schools created and home environments and communities created. For example, during the school summer, my friends and I together created pods for my 7-year-old so that he would have those social environment where he interacted with very small group of friends who also were in very small groups of families. If I knew they had gone outside of the pod of the school system that we had created in our home environment, then I did not allow the interactions until I knew where they had been tracked, if they were any symptoms. So it's very important to have a tracking system when you create your pods. Everyone in the pod needs to be aware of the rules and regulation within your pod. How you interact outside of your pod is key to keeping everybody safe. As they say, you know, wearing is caring. You wear a mask, you care for everyone.
When you mentioned tracking, that's really just what? Asking the fellow members, you know, if they've been on vacation, if the, you know, if the grandparents came over, looking maybe Absolutely. At their Facebook posts, you know, things like that.
You know, it varies again. There are families, there are very, very, very organized families where they write down the events of their days. Like if they've come in contact with someone outside of their pod and they write it down and they share it with people in their pod, they keep track of it by writing in a journal. There are software programs created for different phone systems. For example, our school is creating an app where and all children are being supplied with some sort of electronics so that their society, their environment is tracked every day. Their temperatures is tracked every day so they can create a better, safer environment for kids to be kids. Because you don't want to scare them about being in society, in an environment, but you also want to teach them very proper skills in self-protection and also protecting others.
Yeah. Dr. Nasseri, who's doing the teaching? Is it the parents or are they hiring professional teachers to do this?
Well, my hat's off to all those parents who are amazing teachers. And a lot of them are doing that. They're self-educating, learning what they need to do. And a lot of the moms are taking turns. A lot of the fathers who are working from home are contributing as well. In my circumstance, we were fortunate enough to have a parent who actually is a school teacher to provide that sort of education to the kids in a small environment. But it's all about how you train yourself to train your kids. So yes, you don't have to go out and hire a teacher. You all have to go within the means. Fortunately, our means provided a school teacher who was one of the moms. And we were happy to do that. We all abided by her rules of regulations of education that was consistent with what our previous school had put forth. And in a lot of other situations, you take turns. You know, one day it's arts and crafts and moms who are strong in that, they do that.
How about racial diversity as well? I imagine in a situation like this where parents are choosing who they're going to pot up with, if that's an expression, that there might be a tendency to find pods of, you know, racial pods where it's all white kids or it's all black kids or whatever it might be. And then the children lack that diversity they might find in the classroom.
Absolutely. And that's one of the biggest challenges as a parent I'm faced with. I'm an immigrant myself, and I want my son and my daughters to be well educated about diversity and respect diversity. We're all people, and color should not matter. Origin should not matter. Religion should not matter. And that's why we look up to the guidance from our administrative staff, from our schools, to guide us in creating an environment that's diverse, that's accepting. And therefore, please, for all the parents who are listening out there, don't create an environment where you feel super socially comfortable. You need to create an environment where your kids learn to deal and navigate through circumstances they're not familiar with. And that's the whole purpose of social education.
The tendency will be there, though, for the parent and for the child, as well as socioeconomic pods where you have the wealthy kids who might be able to afford a better teacher, and then the lower income kids where they'll be struggling to even find a parent that has the time to do the teaching.
That's a challenge we'll have to deal with and learn to deal with. But creating an environment where you can navigate through diversity is very important. And for example, our school is a very diverse school. We have scholarship kids. No one knows the scholarship kids exist because kids are kids. They're a blank canvas. They arrive to school and they're educated equally. And as parents, we try to create the same thing in our pods. And we have, you know, for example, I'm Middle Eastern. We have a Jewish family in my pod. We have an African-American family. Mom and dad are both frontline nurses. And so another parent contributes to the drive. The kid gets to one of our homes in time. He's our child. He's everybody's child. All of our children are all of our kids. And that's how it works.
Given the risks of COVID and, you know, and having families involved where there are frontline workers, as you mentioned, are you hearing of families and teachers that are asking for like waivers to be signed or any sort of legal documentation moving into this sort of structure?
It's the honor code. If you know you've been exposed and you are medical personnel, you keep your kid at home until you are out of your quarantine and your family pod is out of the quarantine. But as long as you practice social distancing, practice proper suit gear up for seeing patients, whether with COVID or not, then you're safe. Safe practice has always been our practice before COVID, post COVID, past COVID. And as long as you do the proper care and you know the right measures to take for COVID prevention and spread of it, or any infection spread and prevention, you're okay.
Dr. Nasseri, what about, I understand that there might be some distinctions regarding the number of children that are being taught in these pods, that if you reach a certain number, suddenly you need to have a certified teacher.
I believe that number in state of California is 5. I don't know how it is in every other state, but state of California, if you have more than 5 children, then you have to be a registered educator. We have smaller pods because our home environments are also smaller. We're still doing the 3 feet distancing when the kids are outside. And we, fortunately, in the state of California, the weather has granted us outdoor education. So the kids are under tents, outdoors, getting their education, still doing their nice social distancing of 3 feet. Smaller pods is important in smaller environments because you do want to honor that 6 feet, 3 feet separation for children.
Dr. Bita Nasseri speaking with me yesterday about the viability of pod learning during the pandemic. For the vast majority of students, distance learning will be the new normal for the foreseeable future. Sac City Unified is the largest district in our area, and we are pleased to be joined by Dr. Shiva Zadeh, a school psychologist with the district. She also has her own practice called Pamper Your Brain. And a reminder, you can still ask the doctor a question by using the hashtag AskInsight on Twitter. Dr. Shiva, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And something was written into the script here that I just want to ask our production crew to double check. I think Elk Grove is larger than Sac City, but
yes,
it is, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, good. I wanted to correct that on air as I said it. So, So Dr. Shiva, let's begin with parents. You sent us a list of things that some parents should be mindful of at this time. So let's touch on those briefly. And you would say mental health first. I guess that's, in all cases, right?
Yes, absolutely. With children, it's really difficult to see the anxiety a lot of times, no pun intended, but they're maybe masks of anxiety. So you may see them maybe becoming more irritable or having anger outbursts, behavior changes, even physical complaints of headaches or stomach aches or just refusing to get up. So it's, very important not to shame them or punish them or be dismissive, but to just really provide support for them. And the way that we as parents need to do that is to first put our own mental health in check. One thing some people realize is that anxiety can have a very contagious effect. So if you're anxious at home and you're behaving in an anxious way, most likely your children will also pick up on that and they'll be anxious as well.
You say now's a good time to be flexible, I guess, because things are just so different than they were before. You need to go with the flow a little bit.
Absolutely. It's really important for parents to not be hard on themselves. Be as flexible as possible, because as we're seeing every day, there's changes. The news is changing. And so we just need to remember that at some point, school will open again when it's safe. And that the really exciting thing is that learning can actually take place in so many different environments.
I understand, Dr. Shiva, that it's okay that I call you Dr. Shiva.
Absolutely.
Okay,
sure, good. You can.
Right. So for some parents, I'm not saying for all, but for some, your child is sort of a chance to redo your high school years and help them perfected if maybe you didn't, right?
Right.
And so we got a tweet from someone, Ryan Lundquist, and he's saying that he's bummed for his freshmen that it's a drag to start out high school this way. So I imagine for parents, they're thinking back about their first day at high school and their kids aren't going to have it the same way. What's the best way to process all that for both the child and the parent?
You know, I think that it's fine to have that grief over that. You know, we're human. We're going to be sad about these changes. But at the same time, I really want to advise parents to get excited for their kids. Tell them, you know, some exciting things that they can look forward to. Talk about it. Have your child come up with some ideas of what certain things could look like. Because as we saw this past year, mostly with the senior class, they came up with some of the most creative things I'd ever seen, some of the virtual proms they did and the graduation ceremonies. And so there are silver linings to look forward to. It's just how you frame it for your child, the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. So you're a parent, you're noticing some differences in your kids that you don't remember, behaviors that you didn't see before. What are some really key warning signs that things might not be going well?
Well, it's really important to make sure that your child is still functioning and that they're still eating well, they're sleeping well, they're not completely withdrawn or shut down, they're not having any suicidal thoughts or ideation. If that's what's happening.
What's ideation? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, sure. So suicidal ideation would be if the child is talking about or even journaling about or telling their friend about ideas they have about ending their life. Mm. And typically it gets more serious the more specific their plan would be.
Oh,
uh-huh. Now, if the plan is very general, something like, I just don't want to be alive anymore, you know, that could be an attention-seeking behavior, but it's best to consult with a mental health professional on that because they can do an assessment. So I advise parents who see severe changes in their child to definitely get the help of a mental health professional. And they can start as easily as going to their pediatrician and telling their pediatrician about these changes that they've been seeing that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And then typically the pediatrician will refer to a psychiatrist and psychologist for further assessment.
You talk about having children do some breathing exercises, meditation, maybe yoga. When would you have them do that? When they're feeling the stress or to start their school day, maybe at lunchtime?
You know, what's really great is that one of the silver linings of being at home together is that you can create family rituals together. So if you wanted to, as a family, if you have the time, you could wake up a little bit earlier with your children and set aside like 15 to 20 minutes. And that could include, like I mentioned, some breathing exercises, and you could also do some meditation. One of the biggest things that's so easy to do, which really helps to immediately boost the mood and boost those positive brain chemicals like dopamine and endorphins, is to just simply go outside, if possible, for a simple walk. And mm-hmm. It can be as little as 15 to 20 minutes, because studies have found that this lowers blood pressure. It also helps boost the mood. So if you're able to do that by creating a family ritual, that's probably the best thing. But it can be done at any point in the day. In fact, breathing exercises can be done all day long whenever you're feeling like you're so amped up. On my Instagram page at Pamper Your Brain, I actually have many different breathing exercises that children can do and adults can do, and they can even do them together.
I love that. And when you're outside, look up at the trees and soak in that green. I'm serious about
Absolutely.
This. There's a reason why television stations and radio stations have something called a green room, because the color green triggers those things in your brain. So whoever you are right now, student or parent, when you get a chance, you know, go outside, look at those trees. Sacramento has plenty of them. Dr. Shiva Zadeh, we have to have you back on for a longer conversation at some point because you're really good.
Sure.
So
I love it. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we loved having you here. So you can reach Dr. Shiva on her Instagram at mention Pamper Your Brain, and we'll post her contact information at capradio.org/insight. Thanks again. All right, up next, parenting during the pandemic, the good, the bad, even some fun. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm Randall White. Back in a moment. Welcome back to Insight on.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Cap Radio, I'm your host, Randall White, and we're talking today about the current struggles with education and how children's lives have really been upended with stay-at-home orders. It's our big conversation for the day, and we want to wrap up the discussion by speaking with Katie Semro. She's a freelance audio producer who recently created a piece called Parenting During the Pandemic for her podcast, Transmission Times. And Katie, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me, Randall. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So your piece, Parenting During the Pandemic, strings together the voices of parents from throughout the U.S., and it really captures moments, in their words, of the emotions and struggles brought about by this unique moment in history. I don't know how else to phrase that. but tell us about the project, and how did you find the people who were featured?
Right. Well, so at the beginning of lockdown, I had this idea that it would be great to collect audio diaries to make an archive so we could document this historic moment, right? Get people's voices. And so I started making the Transmission Times podcast with those voices. And as I was doing that, I realized that, you know, as a parent myself, this is such a challenging time. And I thought, okay, let's get the voices of parents. So I just put a call out in as many circles as I could and asked people to share that. And it just kind of went out, and I got tons of responses from across the US and the world, and put together the voices of 20 parents for the parenting special.
Yeah, let's listen in on some of what you heard. You spoke with a dad from here in California. Where specifically in California, do you know offhand?
Somewhere in the Bay Area, I believe.
Let's start with him.
I've had a lot of blowups multiple times where I just gave a shout at the top of my lungs, just yelling in frustration because the kids were just driving me absolutely crazy. Once I threw a box of Magna Tiles across the room. Once I punched the roof of our minivan hard enough to take the skin off my knuckle. Twice now, I've slapped my 8-year-old in the face. In general, I think I'm a pretty decent dad, but this time has brought the worst in me.
That's really disturbing. So the worst in me, what'd you do after you got that?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, for this dad, he lost his job at the beginning of lockdown and suddenly was primary caretaker, you know, for the whole time. And he really just missed being in the office. And it's hard, you know, for some people, it is really, really hard. That transition of, oh my God, now I'm home and I'm with my kids and I'm not used to that can be, you know, it's a lot of stress. And if you lose your job too, then, you know, you've got the income thing to worry about. It's been pretty intense for people. He also had good moments.
Oh, good. Well, yeah, and I guess it's good that he recognizes that it's the worst in him. And and I guess you have to hand it to him for sharing that, because a lot of people, that's not something that they would share.
Yeah, people were really honest. These were audio diary style, so people were just really, really candid, which was amazing.
Some of the parents you spoke with have used the opportunity to get closer to their kids, like the couple who, what, they created a game night?
Yeah, so a couple in New Jersey with a teenage son, they started a game night, and it was a fun time. Let's hear what she has to say about it.
The first few nights were tough. There wasn't a whole lot of, how could I put it, engagement with my 16-year-old. I wonder why. But eventually he really started to warm up to it. We played card games and board games, Sorry. We played Monopoly once, and I quite literally destroyed the two guys. I owned every hotel. That was a pretty fun moment. Would that be a best moment? But I will be very grateful for this time. It's nice because I know he's going to go to school. And if he's like me, I lived at home one summer after my freshman year, and then I never lived at home again. So we'll definitely remember this time with him.
So the pandemic as a positive experience there.
Yeah. Yes. And there were several other parents who had similar moments, right? Kids getting closer, having fun times together.
Connecting with teens.
Yeah, it's like, connecting with teens.
Wow. Okay. One of the voices that we hear, tell us about the mom from Maine with two boys, ages 6 and 9, and her experience with distance learning. She's one of the parents who I guess you would describe as confused.
Right. I mean, I think, like a lot of us, it's just she has a lot of questions about what do I do in this time? What is the best thing to do for me and my kids?
I think one of the toughest things has been the confusion that I felt about what to do with my kids moving forward. Things like, do I send them back to school in the fall? Do I homeschool for a while instead? Is it safe to go do this errand with them? Is it safe to get together with this other family? Should I insist that everybody wear masks? If we're outside, is this okay? Trying to figure out what the best things for my kids are in terms of COVID and keeping them safe and keeping other people safe and keeping our sanity and our mental health. And that's been the hardest part.
It's hard enough to know if you're parenting correctly and then you throw in a pandemic, right, Katie?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
How did you, you get these voices from, as you mentioned, so many different places. How did you string them together? And were there ones that you just thought, I can't use this or I have to put this up front? What was your thought process through all of that?
Yeah, I mean, it was great to hear all the different experiences. My thought process had a lot to do with, like I said, there were a lot of great emotional content. So whenever someone said something that, maybe made me cry or I really resonated with, I thought, okay, that has to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just tried to string it together in a way where they kind of flowed, but also where we didn't have too much negative stuff all in one batch, right? So in the whole piece, there's a couple of maybe harder pieces, and then there's somebody having a nice time, and just kind of goes back and forth. So it's not too heavy and shows all the sides of this pandemic and what it's like to be a parent.
What made you think to do this, Katie?
Well, I just, like I said, as a parent myself, I've got a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old, and we've definitely had our ups and downs. And I thought that it would be a great way to get lots more, like more voices, right? How can I reach like a lot of people? So mm-hmm. many people are parents. And I knew that parents also, have been so busy, we haven't necessarily heard from them. So it seemed like a good opportunity to see if I could get some information about what really it has been like.
Katie Semro, she's a freelance audio producer who recently created a piece called Parenting During the Pandemic. You can hear the entire special at capradio.org/insight. Katie, thank you for spending some time with us today and sharing those voices.
Thank you so much for having me.
So that wraps up our big conversation for the day on education and parenting during the pandemic, but we still have some education to share with you. We want to get you up to speed on some new voices and shows you'll hear on Cap Radio. And for that, let's bring in Cap Radio's program director, Ben Adler. Hey, Ben.
Hey, a longtime caller, first time Zoomer.
Yeah, last time you may have heard Ben, he was informing us all on all things state capital. You did that for 9 years, but as of this year, you wear a new hat at Cap Radio. You're the program director. Congratulations.
Thank you, and congrats to you as well.
Yeah, it's fun to sit in this chair. Program director, for people that don't know, basically you're in charge of what people hear all day, like the sound of the station.
Exactly. And not just on the radio, but across all platforms. So if you're listening to us on your smart speaker or on your phone, your app, however you want to do it, if you're listening to something that we're doing, also mm-hmm. podcast, that involves the program director.
And one of those jobs is to say, hey, this show's working, this show's not. Here's a new show that people are really excited about, and I think CAP Radio listeners would really enjoy it. And so there's a lot of that changing starting on Monday.
Right. So effective August 10th, we're trying to help our nation and our region navigate this pandemic and the protests and politics by increasing our responsiveness to the news during the week. And then we're also adding new weekend shows that we hope will bring you some moments of reflection and respite. The core of our lineup is really staying intact. Obviously, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Insight, Here and Now, Fresh Air, those shows aren't going anywhere. But we're adding some shows that we hope will, in addition to making ourselves more responsive to the news during the week, we'll also bring some younger and more diverse voices to our air.
And the noon hour is when you'll hear some of that, Monday through Friday.
Right. Right. So one of the things we're really excited about is we're adding a talk show, a national show produced at WNYC in New York called The Takeaway. You may be familiar with it, especially because 24 hours from now, you'll be hearing The Takeaway Politics show right. with Amy Walter. That's been running every Friday at 9 for quite some time. But Monday through Thursdays, The Takeaway is hosted by Tanzina Vega, and we wanted to bring her to the air as well. And so we're going to run The Takeaway 5 days a week at noon. So that means Amy Walter's politics show is going to be moving to Friday at noon. And then at 9 a.m. Fridays, not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow will be the first time we're going to move Reveal to 9 a.m. Fridays. That's the award-winning investigative journalism show that's had a really important series of late, an investigative series about taking advantage of a private company that's been taking advantage of basically to them free labor, but profiting off it. Of folks who enroll to get some mental health care. And it's a very disturbing series, but it's a very important one. And they often, their Reveal's reporting often brings change. And so we think, that show's been running at noon on Tuesdays and 4 p.m. Sundays. And we had to take the Tuesday noon slot off because we're running The Takeaway. And then we figured rather than, it's such an important show, we could just leave it Sundays at 4, but we wanted to bring it to a larger audience. And we also think that the news tone of Reveal is a better fit for during the week right now than on the weekends.
Mm-hmm. Reveal's terrific. I took an investigative journalism sort of deep dive course about 4 or 5 years ago, and it was led by some of the people at Reveal, and it was terrific. Hey, one of the ones that I'm excited about here. So I am a Sunday listener. I like
yes.
this. I like listening to CAP Radio on Sundays as I'm going about different tasks I need to do. And we have what you're calling a storytelling block on Sunday afternoons. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. So we are, first of all, it's important to be transparent with listeners. Live From Here has been discontinued by its national producer, American Pope.
And Live From Here was the newer version of A Prairie Home Companion.
That's right. So about a month ago, maybe right around there, they announced that American Public Media, APM, announced that it was going to be ending production of Live From Here. And so we knew that we had a 2-hour hole in our program schedule to fill. And we, when the announcement came out, we had been just about to put our previous round of schedule changes on the air, which was a relatively minor one compared to this one. We added mm-hmm. It's Been a Minute on Saturdays at 11 a.m.
Really good choice.
Thank you. Thanks. Moved Ask Me a Number to Ask Me Another to noon, and then slid Live From Here and Splendid Table back an hour. So they started at 1 and 3, and we did at that point take On the Media off the air and had some questions. Well, why are you doing all this when Live From Here is going away? We had we had our plan set, and then at the last second, right before our schedule changes took effect, we heard about Live From Here. So we resolved that we were going to address that with this larger round of schedule changes, which we had been planning for some time. And so we took the opportunity to create this new storytelling block. We're able to add two really cool new shows, The Moth Radio Hour and Snap Judgment. And then joining them, we're going to take the 6 p.m. Saturday airtime of This American Life and move it to 2 o'clock Sunday. And we're moving the TED Radio Hour. Again, we have to move shows out of the noon time slot. So This American Life was also running Thursdays at noon. So we're going to have The Moth at 1, This American Life at 2, Snap Judgment, which it's known as Storytelling with a Beat, at 3, and TED Radio Hour at 4.
The host of Snap Judgment, Glenn Washington, is terrific.
Yes, I believe he's a Bay Area, if not native, certainly Bay Area resident. Mm-hmm. And then The Moth is this national, it's not just radio. They have, you know, it's live, typically live events.
Yeah.
Of storytelling, of people telling stories without notes at the microphone, and they turned it into a radio show, and it's been really successful.
So Ben, that's a lot, and you didn't even get to everything. So everyone, where can they go on the website to look at how their day is going to play out through their ears?
So you can go to capradio.org, and then it's near the very top of the page in one of the little, larger boxes toward the top is the article where we're laying out what we're doing and why, answering all your questions, including why we're moving Splenda Table for the second time in about 6 weeks or so. and the full schedule is at the bottom of that page. This schedule takes effect Monday, and once it takes effect Monday, you can click the schedule, you know, the PDF Excellent. Program schedule yeah. to get it.
Cap Radio's program director, Ben Adler, thank you.
You're welcome.
And we cannot do Insight without producers Cynthia Lopez and Kyle McKinnon. Managing editor Aram Sarkissian put his special touches on today's show, so a big thank you to him, and he did almost all of the work on his birthday. Thank you, Aram. Hey, we'll see you back here on Monday. We're talking about mail-in balloting.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.